Chapter 45. "What do you want?" Rainey says from the easy chair where she sits.
"Information," replies the man she shot in the wilderness. He limps toward her. One of his pant legs bulges with what Rainey assumes is thick bandaging. She's not sure how badly she wounded him, but she can see from the strain on his face that walking is torture.
"What kind of information?" she asks.
"Lulu, where is he?"
"I don't know. He left us in the boundary waters."
The man sits on the sofa and seems relieved to be off his bad leg. His cohort has moved to the window, watching the street.
"We already know that. Where did he go?" "I told you, I don't know. He just left."
"Did he give you any indication of his intentions?"
"He said he had to set things right."
"Funny. That's what I'm all about, too."
He leans toward her, the handgun resting on his knee. The barrel is fitted with a silencer.
"Your husband's on his way to meet with your son in a place called Bina. They've found a lead of some kind. Do you know what that is?"
"I don't."
"See my friend over there?"
He nods toward the man at the window. The gun he's holding is also fitted with a silencer.
"McHugh's an expert."
He waits, as if expecting her to ask, "What kind of expert?" When she refuses to reply, he says,
"At extracting information."
"I can't tell you what I don't know."
"Maybe you know more than you think you do. When did you last talk to your husband?"
"Not since he left."
"What did he tell you before he left?"
"Just that Stephen and Belle Morisot had returned to Bina with a lead of some kind. Stephen didn't say what that lead was."
"Did they mention Katie?"
"They didn't mention anyone by that name."
He studies her.
"Your husband and son are going to Canada. They think they might know where Lou Morisot is hiding. Do you know where?" "You're wasting your time. I don't know anything."
"Leo," the man says to McHugh.
McHugh turns from the window, grinning as if with the expectation of something quite pleasurable for him. He's taken only a single step toward her when he freezes and looks beyond Rainey, his eyes wide with surprise. The wounded man on the sofa is also looking beyond her, clearly stunned. At her back, she hears a voice she recognizes. "Play this cool, and maybe you'll get out alive."
She turns and sees Prophet standing in the kitchen doorway, with the butt of his scoped rifle snugged against his shoulder, the barrel leveled at Leo McHugh.
"Lulu!"
McHugh's grin gradually returns.
"Glad you could join the party."
"What you're going to do is this," Prophet says.
"You're going to lower your weapon to the floor and step away from it."
"Or?"
"I'll shoot you where you stand."
"You too, Kimball."
"Put down your gun, McHugh," the man on the sofa says, and he slowly lowers his handgun with its silencer to the floor.
McHugh also complies, but he's still grinning.
"Get up slowly, Kimball,"
Prophet says. The man on the sofa rises.
"Now what?"
"We're going to leave this lady in peace.
Come this way.
We'll exit through the back door. Don't want to scare the neighbors."
Rainey watches as the two men approach Prophet, who steps away from the kitchen door to let them pass.
"Miigwech," she says, before he follows them.
She hears the door to the back porch open, then she hears the pop of a small firearm, followed by the more powerful crack of a rifle. She leaps from her easy chair and rushes to the kitchen doorway. The man called McHugh lies on the porch floor, clutching his chest. Prophet stands over him. Kimball is nowhere to be seen.
"What happened?" Rainey says. "McHugh had another gun hidden. Kimball ran."
Rainey's instincts as a healer kick in, and she goes quickly to the wounded man.
He's losing blood. I need to call 911.
She hurries to the phone hanging on the kitchen wall, punches in the three numbers.
What did Kimball say to you?
Prophet asks.
He wanted to know where you went and if I knew anything about where Lou Morisseau might be hiding.
The 911 dispatcher answers, and Rainey tells her about the man who's been shot. She gives her address and is told help is on the way and to stay on the line. But she hangs up. She grabs a kitchen towel and returns to the wounded man who's gone slack with his eyes closed. She tears open his shirt. His chest is a gush of blood, which she attempts to stanch, pressing the folded kitchen towel hard against the wound.
What did you say to him?
Lulu asks.
That I couldn't tell him what I didn't know. I'm sure he thought you were lying. Your husband's gone to a town called Bina, and from there he'll probably head to Canada to find Lou Morisseau. Do you know where?
She looks up from the wounded man. Her hands are covered in his blood.
How do you know this? Doesn't matter. Do you know where he's going in Canada? I don't. You should let him know he'll be tracked.
Tracked? How?
I can't say for sure, but I know these people. Kimball won't stop until he gets what he wants.
From a distance comes the sound of sirens. Lulu hands her a card with a cell phone number written on it.
If you find out where he's going, call me. What do I tell the sheriff? Whatever you want. Just give me a head start. Where are you going?
If everyone's headed to Canada, guess I am too.
I'll do my best to stop Kimball.
He turns to leave.
Prophet, she says, using the name given him in his vision.
He pauses.
Think about the road you're on. Is it the one meant for you?
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, he says. Then he vanishes out the back porch door. When the EMTs arrive, Rainey finally steps away from the bleeding man, returns to the kitchen phone and dials Cork's cell number. When he answers, she says,
"Watch your back, Cork. They're coming for you."
Did he say anything? Dross asks. They're sitting at the kitchen table. The wounded man was long ago rushed to the emergency room of the Aurora Community Hospital. Rainey has called Jenny, told her what's happened, and asked her to make sure she and Daniel keep Wabu away from the house, away from the scene of the shooting, away from the blood still staining the floorboards of the back porch.
He quoted a line from Frost, "Two roads diverged in a yellow wood," Rainey replies.
What did he mean?
He had a choice to make, and he made it.
I don't understand.
I'm not sure I do either.
Did you see where he went, what he might be driving?
Rainey shakes her head. Did he give you any idea what this is all about? He didn't.
Dross gives a low growl of frustration. Then her cell phone rings. She answers and listens.
I'll be right there.
After she ends the call, she says, Anonymous tip. Our fake Lou Morisseau is waiting for us at the North Star Inn, room 17.
You better hurry.
According to our anonymous tipster, he's not going anywhere. Dross rises from the kitchen chair.
Lulu,
Rainey says,
the anonymous tipster?
Probably. I wish to God I knew which side he's on. Two roads diverged, Rainey says. The hell with Frost. Dross walks out, says something to her people in the living room, and Rainey hears her leave, slamming the front door as she goes.